Good evening. Welcome to the Salyer Report. Today is Thursday, June 1st, 2017. In the United States, in Australia, it's Friday, June 2nd, 2017. One of my favorite sayings is, the world can't end today. It's already tomorrow in Australia. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Events. I've been in Sydney, Australia for the last week. I'm sure you can occasionally, you're going to hear the sounds of Sydney from behind me. I've had a one-day trip to Melbourne to see a wonderful healer, and if you're more interested in that, somebody I very much recommend, you can join, if you're joining us at lunch in Sydney on the 16th, I'll tell you about it. Then I flew back to Sydney on a crowded plane, and now you hear the resulting cold. Again, lunch in Sydney, June 16th. That's the day before I leave for Hong Kong. It'll be Jason Bowden-Smith and myself. And if you have questions on Jason's great interview that we just did on EMF radiation, I'm sure he'd be delighted to answer them. As I said, on the 17th, I'm flying to Hong Kong. I'll be in Hong Kong for the following week. I'm very excited because I spent my third year abroad as a student at Chung Chi University, and I'm gonna get a chance to tour the campus and see what they're doing. And then the following week, I'll be in Bangladesh with Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, and she will be recording with me our big theme for the second quarter wrap-up, how do we enforce the Constitution when the government is breaking it? And boy, for that one, you know I want to have a very knowledgeable and successful former member of Congress, perfect person to help. Then I'll be flying back to San Francisco, and while I'm in San Francisco, Joseph Farrell and I will be recording a very juicy stories and trends, new stories and trends for the second quarter wrap-up. We're going to update our Trump administration report card and also do a session on the long-term trends. And that's important to me because as I talk with people about the news, I see the benefit of just keep redundantly repeating the long-term trends because it will help you really move out a lot of the noise if you see those trends. I'm hoping his new organ will be delivered by then and he can tell us all about it. And then that week that I'm in San Francisco at the request of subscribers, we're going to have lunch with subscribers at Perry's in Larkspur. That's in Marin County. And so July 8th, you can sign up on the website. You just look over at events on the left. And then we still have more spaces available for Australia May 2018. We created a second week because the demand was so great. This really, for me, was a trip of a lifetime when I did it in 2015. I can't recommend it enough. It will really change your whole paradigm of how you look at the world in a wonderful way. It was very quietly dramatic for me, and it was also very inspiring and very restoring. There's an incredible group of people that have signed up for both the first week and the second week, so you're going to meet some great people. And again, it's going to be Richard Dolan and myself and Jason Bowden-Smith. We still have prayer books, so if you want one, just let us know, and we'll send one to you. I have told so many people in the last week to please pray the deer's cry when they're in trouble. I have to tell you, I just keep telling people, you don't have to believe it, just pray it, it works. Anyway, and you can also just check out the PDF on the website. It's always available to you in PDF form. Our theme tonight is create your own covering. I want you to really think proactively about actively budgeting time to nourish your mind and health. We have an invisible tsunami rolling towards us and through us. And if you look at what's here now, it's nothing compared to what's coming. And, that tsunami consists of many different things. One aspect is the EMF radiation. I just did so we did a great Salyer report with Jason Bowden-Smith last week. If you haven't listened to it, I recommend it tremendously. I think this is very critical for your health and the health of your family and people you love. Then I also did a book review on a book called Irresistible about addictive technology. It's kind of the shallow, light, socially acceptable version, but it's chilling enough as is. So So these invisible technologies are rolling through all aspects of our life, and it's very important to build time to protect your coherence. On top of this sort of invisible tsunami, we have a global slowdown. You see it here in Australia, despite the wealth of the country. You have Australia as a country with extraordinary natural resources, only 24 million people, although if you look at the immigration, quickly headed to 50 million. It's funny, where I am in Manly Beach, everybody's having babies. It's wonderful to go out and see the festivals and all the kids, but car sales are turning down, the middle class is squeezed, debt is too high, and of course they're facing big demands on re-engineering of budgets and infrastructure like every place else. So we're feeling and seeing that global slowdown, and along with this invisible tsunami, it makes the tensions greater. For those of you in the United States, this is really exacerbated by what I call the shriek-o-meter. The shriek-o-meter is on high volume. I remember the worst I'd ever seen it until now was the Ebola fake news right before the congressional elections in the 2014, when the Republicans wanted to make sure they kept the Senate, won the Senate, and, you know, so they played the race card in a very dirty, ugly way. But this, the shriek-o-meter is higher than I've ever seen it. But the thing that's so bad about it is it's every day. It's been that way for months. It's likely to get much worse. So you need to block it out. And I'm staying in a rental apartment in Sydney, the first thing I did is I unplugged the TVs as soon as I walked in. And they haven't been on. They won't be on. Every morning I go to, or almost every morning, I go to a lovely cafe by the beach and read the Australian business news before I take a long walk on the beach. And it's, I assure you, it's a much more lovely way to get your news. So the result is between this wave of EMF and entrainment and shriek-o-meter, you will watch and see people literally losing their minds. There's no better recent example of that than Evergreen State College. I put up links on the website. I put up one video interview with Tucker Carlson of Fox News with a professor from Evergreen State College, but I also put links that include many other videos. You're watching a group of students out in Olympia, Washington, literally acting like a group straight out of the novel Lord of the Flies. It's pretty ugly, and to me, it's inconceivable that this is not another Kingsman or Chuck E. Cheese brawl prototype. You know, so you clearly have somebody in covert ops, whether it's at the intelligence agencies or a defense contractor, or most likely a telco, testing and prototyping this. My guess is it's very similar to the technology used to create Occupy and Arab Spring and the Hong Kong demonstrations. You know, the question why you watch this technology is, were these kids vaccinated or did they have chip implants? These things are much more in common, including the sort of what's being implanted with us in terms of nanoparticles through the chemtrails that act like receivers. So my guess is the technology is not just what's coming through the cell phone, but some kind of receiver in the body. But I would encourage you to take a look, because I want you to know that this stuff is real, that the population is being weaponized, and you need to be thinking about how to avoid these kind of situations. Especially if you have kids, if you're in college, if you're in high school or college, or you have kids in high school and college, or you have grandkids in high school and college, you know, if you look at the Salier Report subscribers, we span the gamut. But you need to know you're up against this kind of technology, particularly if you're paying $60,000 a year to go to college, or paying for someone to go to college for $60,000 a year, or a private school, and the result is they're, you know, you're getting very strange behavior and results. That money is a terrible investment. It's a terrible investment of that person's time, of their or their family's money. You certainly don't want to be taking out student loans for this. I mean, if anything, it's another argument for homeschooling, or, you know, making sort of private arrangements with other parents to provide for education that's excellent and doesn't involve these kinds of traps. We're seeing kids really get into situations where they end up committing suicide or being bullied. And I will tell you, if colleges want to survive, they have an obligation to protect children and faculty from this kind of intervention. You know, they don't just need police to protect physically. They're going to need cyber police. And this is very serious, because if this kind of stuff keeps happening in colleges, you know, that whole business model could be, an economic model could be destroyed, because ain't no education going on when this kind of stuff is happening. Anyway, I want you to realize that what we're dealing with first and foremost is spiritual and cultural warfare. So when I say that the theme is protect or create your own covering, we all have an obligation in the face of this invasive tsunami to build time into our schedule to build up our direct spiritual relationship with the divine and with nature, and not let this stuff cut us off from that, and to invest in our own cultural nourishment, because we literally, this is the spiritual and cultural equivalent of acid rain, which is pouring down on us. And so we need to counteract this, the energetic force of this, so that you stay on higher ground, because all, you know, all great lives and all solutions come from staying on higher ground. There's a lot in the Salia Report archives to help you do that. We have the Coming Clean with Eunice Boston. We have the Coming Clean article. I've recommended to a lot of people in the last week that they listen to my interview with John Rappaport and the power of it. It may inspire you in sort of figuring out how you want to come up with your, or go, what process you want to create your own covering. The Shriekometer is designed to cover up some of the important long-term trends we hit upon in our wrap-ups. If you go back, if you're a new subscriber and you go back and read or listen to the last 3 years of wrap-ups, I think you'll find a lot of very valuable information, still very curt and still very valuable. I'm going to review them with Dr. Farrell in the second quarter wrap-up during the News Trends and Stories Trend, just to keep you coming back and understanding those long-term trends, because the news makes so much more sense if you see them. But let me just quick run through some of the ones we're going to touch on. Planet equity, the long-term bull market continues to roar along despite all predictions to the contrary. I would point out Wall Street can make a lot of money on a meaningful correction, 20 to 30%, which is long overdue. And frankly, if the establishment wants to pull the rug out from under Trump, I think they have a good chance of doing it if they can get the market, or if they tank the market, which they clearly can. Their problem is the risk of the Midianite thing taking over and creating real trouble in the banking derivative sections. Once you unleash that kind of fear, sometimes things can get out of control. So I think they'll be careful about doing that. But I, despite the sort of long overdue time for a correction, I think we continue to see more and more assets globally that are being represented by the stock market. This is privatization in the root, and it's just going to continue. The pension crisis is upon us. We're seeing the news from not just Puerto Rico, but from state and local governments and all sorts of problems all over the country. There's very little discussion of what that has to do with how mortgage fraud siphoned off a lot of money, and how the engineering of interest rates down basically was a transfer from savers and pensioners into governments. So it's why the interview we did with Kirby on the interest rate swaps is so important, and I encourage you to listen if you haven't. We're going to try and make a video short out of that, so if you don't have time to listen to the whole interview, I'm hoping that will help. The need for infrastructure. Demands are rising all over the world. Big plans for infrastructure building in Asia and Australia. So you feel it and hear it all over the world, although the integration of digital technology means you can re-engineer in a variety of ways that are more economic. Another trend, planet debt and the end of the long-term growth model. It's one of the reasons the Shriekometer is so high. The Democrats are witch hunting, because if you look at who they represent at this point, you have the whole Obama-Clinton section of the Democratic Party that is basically supporting the oligarchs. They don't want democracy, and so they don't want to spend more money on healthcare reform, infrastructure, and tax reform. it's one of the reasons we see Clinton marching around and talking about, oh, poor me, the DNC did me, and the New York Times did me, and James Comey did me, and the Russians did me, and the Trump campaign working with the Russians did me. And the clear message, it's about me, and I'm a victim, as opposed to the citizens. The contrast is Bernie Sanders just gave a great commencement speech at Brooklyn College, which I put up on the website. And he talked about the issues that are really important to the young people graduating that day, and sort of his ideas of how you make America great again. But it was the speech of a really great public servant. I am a Sanders admirer, even though I disagree with him on many issues. But I would much rather have a Sanders than a Clinton. But I think Clinton's in a box, and people like her because they basically are fronting for oligarchs, and the oligarchs don't want democracy, and they certainly don't want a revived populism that translates into success for a broad success in the economy for millions of people in the G7. Interestingly enough, Mike Bloomberg, who voted for Clinton in 2016, noted last week that there's a 55% chance that Trump will be reelected in 2020. He indicated he thought the Clinton-Obama Democrats were digging their own grave, and I agree. Interestingly enough, despite all the witch hunting, a latest Rasmussen poll shows that the majority of Americans, 53%, considered the constant leaking of classified information to the media to be an act of treason. Now, it's interesting, it's only 36% in Democrats and 73% in Republicans, but I would say that the witch hunting is going to boomerang. You know, if you look the effective part of the Democratic Party in the United States, it's the Sanders people who've decided to go to work at the state and local level to recapture the machinery, and I think that that effort long-term will be very healthy. The shift from global 2.0 to 3.0 is a trend we've talked about for several years. We've spent more than a few wrap-ups talking about it. It's very important to see. You know, it started years ago when Joseph and I said, look, stop listening to all these people who say it's going to collapse. The money's just being shifted out of 2.0 to 3.0. 2.0 is collapsing, but 3.0 is rising, which means the overall system is going to rise, and the reason they're sucking the money out of 2.0 and basically doing controlled demolition of global 2.0 is because they want to accelerate the investment in 3.0. A perfect example, one statistic I saw last week, 12.5% of the U.S. market cap comes from FANG. FANG is Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. That's an extraordinary number, especially if you add Apple into it. At this point, you now have the U.S. economy at about 24% of global GNP, but 50% of global market cap. And so to say that the market's frothy and overdue for correction is ever more an understatement. Another example of this shift from global 2.0 to 3.0, we're really seeing it in the retail and the collapse of physical retail sales. Amazon was 1% of U.S. retail sales in 2010, 5% in 2017. It's expected to be 7% by the end of 2018, and it's 43% of the U.S. e-commerce market. Its stock is up 32% year-to-date and 40% in the last 12 months. In the meantime, Amazon is now arriving in Australia. Everybody's getting ready. Uh-oh. But it's not just Amazon. Alibaba is on a tear as well. So we're really seeing the reorganization of retail for digital technology, both mobile in the physical store and online. Another major impact, of course, artificial intelligence, which is happening everywhere. But a great example is the new head of Ford was the head of their mobility unit. So the CEO basically, or the current CEO for the last 3 years has been sacked. The stock is down 40%, and they're bringing in the guy. He's got a reputation and experience as sort of a turnaround artist. But he's been in the he'd been on the Ford board for a while, and then was in the mobility unit. But clearly, what Ford is repositioning himself to be is to completely reinvent their business model for autonomous cars. Now, the autonomous cars really won't make their way to the to the market. For serious marketing to retail customers, it'll take a couple of years, and then to really have a significant impact in terms of market share, different experts are predicting 10 to 15 years. I'm a skeptic because I think cybersecurity and cyber warfare stand in their way in a very big way. So you're going to have to get the security issues worked out before people are going to trust the safety of cars. Meantime, if Ford figures it out, and Ford investors are going to be happy if they buy either now with the stock price down 40%, but if we get a 30% correction, it'll be very interesting. That'll be a very interesting opportunity to bet and win or lose on who figures out the autonomous car. Autonomous car, it wouldn't surprise me if the Germans came out on top on that one because their engineering is so fantastic and people are going to trust their security. Uber announced this week that they had lost $708 million. The CFO quit. And that's a perfect example why this transformation into a new car model is going to be one where investors can and will lose a great deal of money. I suspect that there are a lot of people who are going to take quite a loss on Uber. That's not just changes in the model. That's really lousy management. Two more trends I want to just bring up. Globalization keeps trucking along. Globalization wants to happen, not just because the globalists wanted to make it happen, but there are all sorts of reasons why the Asia per capita is rising and the development of the Silk Road wants to happen and other trade routes as well. And we'll discuss this with Farrell some more in the second quarter wrap up. Again, one I've asked Joseph to really help me focus on is our 2015 wrap up, which we published in January 2016. And if you haven't read it, I really recommend it to you. The theme was space, here we go. Everywhere you turn, you see more and more about what's happening in space. There's a lot going on that you don't read about. But I would note that Bigelow, who's the head of Bigelow Aerospace, was just on 60 Minutes talking about how aliens are here. And it just goes to show you, if Bigelow's doing it on 60 Minutes, that's a big change in corporate policy that sort of went out on a soft launch. Anyway, so let me just repeat those again. Some of the really big trends that are going to, I think if you understand them, all the news is going to make sense, and you can kind of screen out the noise of the shriek-o-meter. So number one, planet equity. Number two, pension crisis is upon us. Number three, the need for infrastructure. Number four, planet debt, end of long-term growth model. Of course, that includes the coming clean over the fiscal cliff on the U.S. budget. The shift from global 2.0 to 3.0, globalization keeps trucking along, space, here we go. Again, we're going to focus more on those in the second quarter wrap-up, but really make an effort to go back and read those old wrap-ups and the past 3 years of wrap-ups and get an understanding of those trends, because I think you'll find it much easier to scan the news and track what's going on if you have a deep understanding. Money and markets, I'm working from the Wednesday close. U.S. dollar index is now broken. It really has broken that $100 line. All the exporters are going to be thrilled. So it was trading at 96.85 at the end of Wednesday close, or Wednesday U.S. close. Fixed income is doing better. It's perked up. The long-term treasury ETF at 5.3%, the intermediate at 3%. Bond aggregate at 2.5%, and junk soaring along at 4.52%. The junk keeps defying me. June 13th and 14th, we have a Fed meeting coming up. Numerous Fed presidents and members of the committee indicating that they support a bump in interest rates. But inflation, they say, is softening. If you look at my grocery bills, it's not softening, but there are aspects, you know, certainly the global economy is softening. So indication that they may back off on later interest rate bumps, but not this one. So let's see what that does. It may give a little bit of a haircut to the where the bonds are so far. Equities, the S&P now up 8.5%. Again, if we get that 30% correction, we're going to be down for the year. Home builders doing well at 11%. Real estate is flying everywhere you go. And of course, being in Sydney, Sydney is the property market boom of just about, it's one of the top markets globally. They have just been in a boom. In 2008, they didn't even take a dip. VGK, the European ETF, now up 18%. That's the good news for the establishment on the Macron victory in France has been very good for European markets. Germany up 17.15%. Developed markets minus North America up 14.5%. China large caps doing very well given all the problems there at 15.6%, and small caps 12%. And emerging markets up 17%, very strong performance for the emerging markets this year. Part of that is, of course, the falling dollar. Commodities now, the index down 6.62%, gold's up 10%, silver up 8.5%, and oil down in the doghouse down 20%, so you know it's tough to be in Russia and Saudi Arabia. But they don't seem to have any problem buying hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons. In the UK, the Labour Party is skyrocketing the polls in the last week, to everybody's surprise. There are allegations about the relationship of the alleged Manchester bombing with the British intelligence activities when May was Home Secretary. So, but I think if Labour is coming up seriously, it's because people are tired of getting squeezed. It's an economic issue. The election's on June 8th, so only a little bit less than a week away. And so if Labour gets close, it's going to be a very tense week and very interesting. In the European Union, God bless Trump. He went to the Paris Accord and said he wasn't ready to commit, and then announced U.S. Thursday that he's pulling out. A portion of that speech and then a link to the transcript is up on the website. Merkel got very huffy. The other six members of G7 committed to the Paris Accord. And then Merkel gave a speech saying Europe was on her own. And then the Financial Times published a editorial saying Merkel shouldn't have done that. That was being huffy. And Richard Haass, the head of the Council on Foreign Affairs, put out a tweet saying this is everything we've tried to stop since World War II, is Europe thinking it's on its own. Oh dear, oh dear. It was the right thing to do to pull out of the Paris Accord. And for those of you who keep whining and saying there's no difference between the candidates, the reality is Trump has pulled us out of Trans-Pacific Partnership and out of the Paris Accord. Those are two enormous changes and very, very significant. For the allies who worked with us to negotiate and pass the whole thing and get the whole, you know, whether it was the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the Paris Accord sort of organized and lined up, it's very painful. So you spend years negotiating something with a country and then a new president gets elected and bam, the plug gets pulled. So that's very painful. The reality is he did the right thing. I got one or two subscribers asking me for the definitive book on climate change. In my experience, there is no such thing. I posted in the comments section a recommendation to see my book review on Naomi Klein's book on climate change. The title of the book review is This Does Not Change Everything. Her book was basically dreadful on climate change, but I explain what the ideal book would include, and I have yet to find it. If you know what it is, definitely send it. There is a problem in terms of dealing with the United States that is legitimate, and that is every time the president of the United States talks with a foreign leader, the transcript is floated and leaked to the media in a way that can only be described as illegal and criminal. The extent of the practice right now is absolutely outrageous. it's pretty shocking, and it puts you in a position of saying, you know, Washington is full of nothing but children all playing their own silly games. In the meantime, Europe called for, Brussels is now calling, and the EU is now calling for sovereign debt from across the Eurozone to be bundled into a new financial instrument sold to investors as part of a plan. It's basically the North integrating with the South in the debt structure so the South can come along. The reality being in the EU, you know, bundling the North and the South really doesn't make sense. They really should have their own separate currencies, so they either integrate or come apart. It'll be interesting. I don't think that will work, because I think ultimately fundamental economics will speak for themselves, and the South and the North will really have to organize apart. Philippines, the leaked transcript is, here we go with the leaked transcript problem. Duarte's had a conversation with Trump. The entire transcript has been published by numerous members of the press. And it's very irritating. You see a variety of people offended by Duarte's using bounty hunters to get rid of the drug dealing in the Philippines. I must say, I'm certainly no expert on the Philippines, but from what I've known and seen, you have a serious drug problem. The Anglo-American Alliance, or let's just call them Mr. Global and the oligarchs, are taking huge amounts of money out of the Philippines on drugs, have for a long time. It's very detrimental to the economy and the health of the spiritual health and cultural health of the country, and Duarte is doing the right thing. Now, Duarte points out in one of his latest interviews, which I posted at the Solera Report, that he didn't feel he could do the kind of things he's doing now because it would be a violation of human rights, and he finally figured out that the people who were pushing all the human rights stuff were the same people or basically on the same payroll as the people pushing the drugs. And in fact, it was a pincer movement to protect the drug dealing and justify the lawlessness. You know, you can't hurt our drug dealers because that would be a violation of their human rights, but they're free to deal drugs and destroy your children and your economy. Anyway, so if you look at what Duarte's doing, it looks to me like it's making a lot of sense. It's not perfect, but there is no perfect solution. If ISIS is moving into the Philippines, I suspect it's moving into the Philippines because he's been very successful at shutting down the drug business, and the people who control that business are very irritated, so they're moving ISIS in as an escalation of the war. And the reality is, you know, organized crime is a parasite, and we're coming into an endgame where we need to decide if we're going to tolerate the parasite or not, but the parasite is getting more expensive. Duarte said during the interview that he would do this as long as he was president or until the CIA killed him. Let's hope the CIA doesn't kill him, because I think if they do, it's going to make a lot of people angry, including a lot of Americans. At some point, we have to stop being for the terrorists. Russia. Putin was in Paris for a meeting with Macron. One of the first things Macron did was invite Putin to Paris. Apparently, the establishment is perfectly happy for Macron to get together with Putin. You know, it seems they want to keep people apart who believe in national sovereignty. And who believe in productivity, but as long as the person is a globalist, it's fine if they can get together with Putin. So Trump and Tillerson can't get together with Putin, or there's a huge hullabaloo if they do, but oh, it's fine if Putin gets together with Macron. As an American, it's very irritating. Anyway, while Putin was in Paris, he did an interview with Le Figaro, which was quite interesting and good to read. And I would recommend it to you. It's up at Solari.com. I got it from Saker, who did a good job of getting it up, along with a review of the beginning of the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. While the Bilderbergers are meeting in Chantilly, Virginia, the St. Petersburg Economic Forum is going on, and I suspect that's going to be a lot more interesting. What's interesting about both Trump and Putin is they both are into productivity. And the reality is that if you look at the globalist group, the oligarchs, there's a lot of waste there, including a lot of waste that Mr. Global doesn't need. And so I have reason to believe that that group is very, very scared. Anybody who's been stealing a lot and skimming a lot has reason to be scared for those two to get together. They're just too pro-human and too pro-productivity. If you listen to Trump's comments in his speech on the canceling the climate accord, it's so interesting because he keeps coming back to the numbers. Here's a guy who can count. Here's a guy who can price. It's fantastic. And this is why these are deals. You know, if you look at Obama, he's a lawyer, he's a process person, he was a community organizer. The money's not real to him. Price isn't real. And to Trump, it's real because he's had to make a profit. Obama's never had to turn a profit in his life. It's interesting. Let me just read you one comment from Putin in the Figaro article. This is Putin speaking. We had no special expectations. The U.S. president is steering a traditional U.S. policy. Of course, we remember that during his election campaign and also after he was elected and assumed office, President Trump spoke about his intention to normalize the relationship with Russia and said that it cannot be any worse. We remember this. However, we also see and realize that the political situation in the United States is influenced by those who have lost the elections but refuse to accept their defeat and who continue to use the anti-Russia card and various allegations most actively in the political infighting. This is why we are in no hurry. We are ready to wait. Yet we strongly hope that Russian-U.S. relations will become normal again sometime in the future. So the Russians are smart, patient people, and so they're going to play that waiting game. One of the other stories I wanted to touch on was we see the U.S. testing its ICBM missile shield successfully, and that has important implications for what we do in North Korea, but it also has implications for Russia if we continue to build it out globally and in Eastern Europe, because they're worried about us engineering a first strike, as we've talked about before. North Korea is a conundrum. They continue to test their missiles, and this is arguably a tough nut for the U.S. and its Asian allies if the U.S. is going to maintain its position and its relationship with its allies. If it doesn't, they're going to cut and run and sort of realign with China and, to a much lesser extent, Russia. There's no way North Korea can do what it's doing without Russia and China supporting them. The reality is if North Korea stays out of the central banking warfare model and remains independent, that's much better for Russia and China. But this one is going to be a very tough nut for Tillerson. It's going to be interesting to see what he does. I continue to be very impressed with how he handles himself and the situation. For somebody with no government experience, he's doing quite a good job. I wanted to bring up, I keep having various people whine about how Donald Trump is doing as president, and I look at this very differently than they do. I see Trump is working in a very complex matrix structure with lots of checks and balances. And he can do what he can do, but he can't do what he can't do. He's basically, his hands are tied by what can be done politically. So I keep using the analogy of Hank Aaron, who was my favorite baseball player. I think his lifetime record was 351. He batted 351, which meant he struck out at most of the times he went at bat. You know, and when he went at bat, occasionally got a home run. He was famous for his home run record, but most of the time he got single, doubles, and triples. So, you know, being the president of the United States is the same. And if you look at what Trump is up against, his persistence and ability to continue to turtle forward despite the witch hunting is remarkable. Now, one of the interesting things is from the time he got elected on, I'd been saying he needs to set up a special war team. And lo and behold, he came back from the foreign trip from Saudi Arabia and Israel and Paris and announced, yep, we're going to set up a war room. So I think it's better late than never. But I'm hoping a war room will sort of improve his batting average. Anyway, we'll talk more about the Trump administration cards during the second quarter wrap-up. I would note he came out with his budget this last or 2 weeks ago, and of course it was dead on arrival. He defunded 66 groups or agencies, a good sign, but Washington is not ready for the shock of coming over the fiscal cliff. So there's going to be no nice way to do it. It's part of the reason, I think, as I said, the Democrats have decided to choose witch hunting because they don't want to have an honest conversation about the money. It's too uncomfortable. One of the reasons I wanted to do the theme, how do we enforce the Constitution when the government is breaking, is the part of the Constitution they're breaking that concerns me the most has to do with the money. So we'll be talking a lot about the missing money. And of course, Trump's been silent on it. Although it's interesting, if you listen to his piece on one of my teammates picked this out and sent it to me, and I was like, wow, you get it. During his cancellation or his speech on the cancellation of the Paris Accord, he pointed out sort of missing money on the green fund that the accord has been funding. So the U.S. is putting up money and then the money goes in the pot and then it kind of disappears. And you can tell he's picking up on the missing money beat, which is a good sign. Our hero this week is Elizabeth Young, a very inspiring story that one of you brought to our attention. You posted it in the comment section. Elizabeth Young is a 72-year-old Pennsylvania grandmother. Her son fell on hard times, and she took he and his family into her home in West Philadelphia, where I grew up. And the feds or somebody proceeded to catch him. I think it was the local guys proceeded to catch him selling $200 of marijuana, which was used as justification to seize Elizabeth's car and home. And so they took her car and home as punishment for her son selling marijuana while he was living there, even though it was not with her knowledge and permission. She'd been very adamant he couldn't be doing any of that if he was living in her house. I don't know how she managed to do it, but she managed to go back into the courts and take it all the way through the appeal court to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and won quite handily. And the one thing I will say is I hope the courts give her interest and legal fees from the beginning. There are two points behind this story. What's been done with prisons and asset forfeiture is worse than what Hitler, or it's just as bad as what Hitler did. Don't talk to me about Hitler's slave labor camps. You know, we've been doing it here. We've been going into neighborhoods, rounding up innocent kids, throwing them in prison. If they're involved in drugs, it's because we brought the drugs in. Don't tell me the government's bringing the drugs in. They are. So, you know, what's going on with prisons and asset forfeiture is absolutely outrageous. That's point number one. Point number two is you must be impeccable with the law. So you cannot, if you look at what's happened with the draconian nature of the legal system, you cannot have kids taking drugs around your house, or I mean, you're asking for serious trouble, because this is the game. It's a game of economic warfare, and this is how they play it, and it's not nice. They play dirty. But you know, it's what Bob Dylan said, to live outside the law, you must be honest. If you want to be free, you have to be impeccable about the law, and you have to make sure your kids know this. It's very, very dangerous. Let's go to the movies. Daniel talked about the Rockefeller cartel in his discussion of the Bilderbergers. And so I thought it would be useful to go back and look at the history of the Rockefellers. It's a very interesting story. And there's a big question now with David Rockefeller's death at the age of 101 or 102. You're really seeing a generation pass away. And the question is, the Rockefeller intergenerational power and money still exists as an institution. The question is, without family leadership, where will it go? What will it do? Another point in thinking about this generational passing we're really watching the men who killed Kennedy dying off one by one. In my opinion, that if there was anyone at the top of that conspiracy, it was David Rockefeller and the board of the Rockefeller Foundation, and with Dulles and Doug Dillon being the sort of inner, you know, linkage between the government groups and the military and the Rockefeller Foundation. So if you want to know more about that, as I've said many times since I interviewed David Talbot, his book on Dulles, The Devil's Chessboard, is the single best book on the Kennedy assassination ever written. And I recommend it to you. And it will, if you get all the way to the end, you'll see why I say if there was anyone at the top of that conspiracy, it was David Rockefeller, which is why his death is such a, really is the end of an era. Although there's still many, there's still a couple of very important co-conspirators still knocking around. Our interview was with Daniel Estulin. Daniel now lives in Canada. He was lived in Europe for a long time. Daniel is from a Russian family and works and coordinates with Russian military intelligence, as he describes in the interview. And he's been writing and focusing on the Bilderberg Group for a long, long time. He has a very popular bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, and just published a new documentary. We talk about the latest meeting there. The Bilderbergers are meeting in Chantilly, Virginia, right now as we speak, from the June 1st to the 4th. Topics on the agenda include the Trump administration and transatlantic relations. They're going to be very concerned and interested about how they continue to not have the U.S. and the Anglo-American alliance separate out. Brexit separates out England from Europe, and then this latest cancellation of the Paris Accord separates out the United States from Europe. And of course, after the Trans-Pacific Partnership, they were expecting to have the equivalent for the Transatlantic Partnership. So whether the future of the Transatlantic International Order is on the table, as is the direction of the EU. And then one of the things on the agenda, which is so frustrating, is why is populism growing? Now, you can't even imagine that anybody would want to talk about this. But I think the reason they want to talk about it is they really don't know. I mean, here's the problem. If you mind control the general population, you end up hating them because they seem so stupid to you. So, you know, you have inside information and the world seems clear. Meantime, you give them disinformation and you entrain them and you know, dumb them down with vaccines and bad schooling, and then you find them stupid. And so you have this cycle of disrespect. The problem is you end up getting mind controlled as well. I mean, for all I know, Mr. Global is mind controlling them, but you fall into this trap of thinking you're superior. It's amazing how confident you can be with inside information. And, you know, I've lived a life where I was privy to all that stuff, and it's really very delightful. You know, but I never fell into the trap of thinking other people were stupid because they didn't have that information. I just figured they didn't have that information. But you get sort of an empathy shutdown. And what makes it worse is when you're leading in a highly centralized system, it can be very frustrating. There's so many double binds, particularly when the general population doesn't understand what's going on and there's no transparency, particularly financial transparency. And one of the problems with no financial transparency, including, as I always beat the drum about, by place, is, you know, the leadership ends up being just as stupid as the general population, and the extent of the misunderstandings are pretty wild. This is a group that's feasting on federal credit and federal credit rig deals and fraud and waste, and they've literally forgotten the extent of their feasting. Although, you know, when you threaten it, it's the speed at which their intuition understands the threat is pretty amazing. They don't believe in democracy. They don't believe democracy works. They want to shed the Constitution. They really believe oligarchies work. And it's what I've said for many, many years. People who lead in a rigged system get stupid. You know, it's a different kind of stupid. It's a different kind of hubris, but it's just as dangerous as the mind control and the stupidity we see, you know, throughout our population. I think the real solution, it's what I've said many times, but I described in the first quarter wrap-up, there is 5 to 10% of the general population that is very interested in policy, in government, will take responsibility to understand the complexity. They're much more grounded. They're much more knowledgeable. And I think it's unbelievably important in every local, state, and federal jurisdiction that the leadership find a way to engage with that 5 to 10%. Now with software, there's a way for Trump to create a communications capacity that engages with that small percent. They're really the early adapters. And you engage with that 5 to 10%, it'll make you much more intelligent, but you'll also get much better alignment with the general population, and you'll get a lot less harm from the mind control and the small thinking. So I think the solution is for the leadership to find that 5 to 10% in the general population that can really help things get turned around. And it's just a matter of the leadership that puts together the capacity to do that. And Trump has the ability to do that. And if anybody should do it, it's him. He needs to engage with people at an economic level on price. And that's why I think the place-based transparency could be so great, because he's such a phenomenal, he's got such a phenomenal mastery of price and money and can price out situations quickly. Okay, Ask Catherine. Thank you for the links. We keep getting great links and posting a lot of them. Okay, first question. I've been following both you and Saker for the past 6 to 7 months. This regards your upcoming discussion with Saker. I would like to see a follow-up to a discussion on the PDF pages 54, 58 of your last talk. I hope this does not sound like gibberish. Saker said, "What this country needs is not government change, it needs regime change. In a profound meaning of the word, they don't just need a different government or a different president." You replied, "I think it needs more than that, because I think it needs a consciousness shift. I think you need the American people to have a significant consciousness shift, because the power in this country starts in 3,100 counties, one county at a time. The problem is not just in Washington. It's in every county. The drug dealing, the mortgage fraud, it's in every county." Anyway, so I won't read the rest of his comments, but basically what he said is, you know, the United States has a negative return on investment. These are my words, not his. The full question will be in the script. The United States has a harmful impact on the world, and if America fails, it'll be better for the world than if America's great again. So I've asked Saker if he will discuss this during our discussion with him 2 weeks from now, and he said he'd be delighted to. So thank you. It's an excellent question, and we will indeed, Saker and I will address it in our discussion on the emerging multipolar world. Catherine, thanks for the great 5G interview with Jason Bond-Smith. In the interview, Jason mentioned that we don't get vitamin D during morning sunbathing, but he never said when optimal vitamin D sunbathing occurs. Could you please ask him? Yes, I asked him, and I posted the answer. I sent it to you and posted it in the commentary, so I hope that's helpful. Catherine, I enjoy your presentations very much and your wonderful website. Just wondering if you are aware of George Webb's U2 series. He is currently on day 216 and has done a fantastic job exposing DynCorp. Look on past days when his titles, when he titles his series The DynCorp Harvest. Check out what he is currently doing if you care to. He's a brilliant investigator and metadata journalist. Yes, I am aware he's doing an open source YouTube series, and day to day, I don't, you know, I have no way of knowing whether the information is accurate or it's not. I think he's part of open source is you're collecting stuff, sifting through, throwing it out there, seeing what you can figure out that's real, that's what's not. So it's raw data. I do think that he's certainly giving a lot of folks an enormous education on covert side thinking. And I think that's very positive. So, but again, it's a lot of raw intelligence, and be very careful of any particular data point. Because he's working with, you know, lots of allegations and what's true or not. Hard to say. Catherine, love your website and have shared it with several friends. I'm a devotee of holistic living and one of contributors to my personal practice is Roy Masters. He's the founder of the Foundation for Human Understanding. The name is a bit new agey, but Mr. Masters is a devout Masonic Jew who has been gently leading people to a better way of life using the basic Judeo-Christian principles of love and forgiveness. His website is www.fhu.com. Thank you. I will take a look at that. I'll look at that with interest. I will definitely check out. Hello, Catherine. Thank you for your very palatable brand of matrix-breaking info. I've been studying health and nutrition for so long now and just banging my head against the wall because no one's choices and actions seems to make sense. My children's schools, our pediatrician, our health policies, our local, state, federal government actions, newscasters, comedians, actors, until I stumbled upon a study on PubMed that outlined the depopulation agenda. You would think that finding such a thing would be horrible, a shock to the system. For me, though, it was a huge relief because suddenly everything came into focus and made sense. It actually lightened me up a bit. Your interviews and articles have made such a welcome continuation of my understanding of what the heck is going on around you. Question, when you speak of entrainment, it feels like it makes sense to me, but I don't understand why it seems that people are picking up different flavors. For example, Hillary versus Trump or the pro-vax versus the anti-vaxxers. Part of what you're seeing, so what you saw with Hillary versus Trump was niche marketing, the mind control. Because remember, what you're trying to do is divide and conquer. So you want, as part of the disinfo and entertainment, you want real competition, you want real fights, you want divide and conquer. So you're having one group worked with a definitely different message than another. And now there's a lot more things going. There were real issues going on there too. It wasn't just the mind control. And also sometimes the entrainment doesn't work. If you look at a lot of the anti-vaxxers, they're people that, you know, sometimes the facts can break through and cancel the trance. And so in a lot of those situations, I just see people who, for a variety of reasons, the trance doesn't work on. It's I've always found that some people are remarkably immune to mind control, particularly if they stay away from TV and don't live on their smartphone. So there's a wide variation, but some people seem to be remarkably immune. Idea, I think a lot of your subscribers would love to gift a subscription to friends and family, but cannot afford the monthly cost of giving away many subscriptions. It might knock people's socks off a bit too much if they got access to alien and pedophiles right out of the gate. Maybe you could format a gateway for gift subscriptions that would be curated as an introductory version of Solari. Your bio and your presence are very reassuring to people like myself who generally tended to avoid tinfoil hats. That's a good idea. See the Just a Taste on the left side of the blog. It's we make a list of all the stuff we make available for free. We collected it up there, so for people who want to get a taste without subscribing, it's there. I should probably come up with a gentle intro version, or we also do give the gift at Christmas time where you can give a subscription, and we ought to think about giving one that's a more gentle intro version. So I thank you for that idea. It's a good one. Hi, Catherine. Absolutely loved your recent Caravan to Midnight appearance. Jumped on your site and I'm now a subscriber. Would love to join you folks for the 2018 Oz trip. Please let me know how to hold a spot. I'm traveling to Adelaide end of this week on business, aviation relation. Who am I? Check me out. I'm a Caravan to Midnight guest with John a little over a year ago. We sent you the information and hope you can come. Dear Catherine, I've been a member of the Solari Report for a couple of months, but have listened to you via podcasts over the years. Thank you for all the insights you've provided. You've truly been enlightening. Being a resident of Palo Alto, California, and a longtime member of the tech community in the Silicon Valley, I've taken interest in your discussing, although briefly, the money flow and sources that have enabled Silicon Valley to rise to the current critical mass and level of success. Do you have a more comprehensive report that walks through your follow the money approach that clearly describes what has been going on? If not, would you please explain in detail in an upcoming report or podcast? I will look for an opportunity to do that. It would be a good idea to do that. So let me think about that, because I think that would be very valuable. I hope you'll be able to schedule the lunch in Palo Alto in July. We tried to do it in July, but the only thing, they were all so expensive, it kept coming in at $100. We try and do these lunches, so we pass through most or all of our costs. We don't make any money on them, and I couldn't do Palo Alto for much less than $100, so we just had to go to Marin. San Francisco was going to be $75. That was still too high. At some point, I think we're all just going to have to get sandwiches and sit on the grass in the park. It would be great to meet you and to discuss firsthand how I can support your one county at a time approach to creating wealth for all people, starting with my own county, Santa Clara. That would be great. There's some great people around you who I think could help. Could not get a reason. I did send you a really good video history that I'd put up at Solari. It was part of the early history. And then I recommended that you read Corse's book, The Day After Roswell, which I think is a really seminal work on this topic. But I will think about how to put together something for you. Hello, Catherine. The question is for the upcoming report with Jason Bawden-Smith. So I put this to him, and we discussed this in the Solari report. Okay. Then a question from Australia, which I will handle separately. And I've gotten several requests for the In the Dark book, and in fact, that we've gotten requests for more books than I had, and Jason has agreed to send another box down to Hickory Valley, or I should say up to Hickory Valley, Tennessee. So we want to make sure we fill all of those, but we sent out everything that we had. So if you don't, if you weren't in the first ones that requested it, then it may take us a couple of weeks to get you the book, but everybody's due a book. So we have your names and addresses, and we'll send them all. But if you, if for any reason you don't get it within a month, if you could let customer service know, because Jason has promised to send us another box of books, and that should be able to take care of everyone. Okay, that's it for this week. In closing, coming up, we have a wonderful interview that Harry Blaser did with the Devros family from Pasadena on an urban homestead. Very inspiring story of a very inspiring family. And it just goes to show you what we can do to provide our own fresh food. And then June 5th, Saker rejoins me for the Emerging Multipolar World, given what's happened now with the prime... with the U.S. pulling out of the peace accord and Macron meeting with Putin in the St. Petersburg Economic Forum. We're going to have plenty to talk about, so I'm really looking forward to that. So two great ones in the lineup, and then remember in July, we go rolling into the second quarter wrap-up. Our theme is how do we enforce the Constitution when the government is breaking it? I'm going to be doing that interview with Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, and then Joseph and I will be chewing through the news trends and stories, including a section on the long-term trends and the report card, an update on the report card for the Trump administration. So until next week with Harry Blaser, and I'll be talking with you again from Sydney for the next 2 weeks. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.